This is Peter Wallace, and I'm here at the Festival of Homiletics 2007 in Nashville. And with me is Shannon Johnson Kirshner from Woodhaven Presbyterian Church in Irving, Texas, right?
That's right.
Welcome.
Thank you. It's good to be back. It's been a couple of years since I've come to the festival.
Okay, good. And it was it a couple of years you were preaching on day one?
Last March. A year ago last March, yeah.
Well, we hope to have you back sometime soon. Let me ask you why you come to the festival. This is not your first, but why do you like to do this?
No, I kind of joke that I'm becoming a bit of a groupie. The festival for me, and I notice when I miss it, and I always think later that I should have brought Kleenexes with me, because it is in almost every presentation, in almost every worship service and sermon, something about it feeds me at a place where I didn't know I was hungry. I think several things are going on, and I have to say I've been fascinated by the growth in the conference in this year's numbers. And I think one of the reasons, other than, you know, Nashville is a pretty great place to meet, but I'm wondering if one of the reasons might be that those of us who are in mainline Protestant congregations, perhaps moderate to progressive theologically, open to wrestling with texts and testifying to what we see and hear in those texts, that if we find ourselves kind of lonely in the world of the larger church and in the world of Christendom, and that we need to find folks with whom we can just relax for a while and where we can say what we think, where, you know, Anna just preached about, just lectured about fear, and I do believe that fear is one of the temptations we battle daily. And this is a place where I think we can really hear the be not afraid language of Scripture and the Gospels. I will never forget a few years ago, I think it was Barbara Lundblad who gave a presentation, and in it was really a discussion of scriptural authority and kind of a liberating hermeneutic. And I will never forget the response was that all of us who were at Fourth Presbyterian in Chicago stood, and I think we applauded for 10 minutes. And a lot of us were crying, and it was this sense of that applause became this embodied prayer of gratitude. And that moment has really stayed with me, and I find little pieces of that every time I come to something like this that I did not realize that I maybe was feeling lonely or that I was feeling a little dry or hungry until I come and feel nourished, and that releases it. And I always leave thinking, okay, I can do this for another year. And so though all of those reasons are motivations for me coming. And of course you see old friends and you get to hang out with people who do what you do, and you don't have to talk about it if you don't want to, but you can if you choose to. And it's just to look around last night at all the people who were here of all ages and both genders, and all, there's a lot more diversity than I remember in the past, and to think, oh my goodness, we're all in this together. That's a really, it's an important affirmation for me. And of course you have all the preachers who come, absolutely, that's the speakers, but even more than that for me, it is the community that's formed, which is important.
You referred to Anna Carter Florence, who we just heard lecture, and Barbara Lundblad's message of a couple of years ago, and both of those speakers and many of the others push us to kind of go beyond where we feel safe, to stick our necks out a little bit, to try to overcome that fear of saying too much or going too far. We heard it last night. Is that something that you deal with? Is that something all of us preachers should be trying to address in this culture?
I something I deal with, and I'll let other preachers speak for themselves, but it is something I deal with, and it's something I deal with because I love the people in my congregation. And I would never want to do or say anything that would cause them harm. But I do believe that what's becoming clearer to me, and the challenge we heard again last night, was that sometimes we are called by God to do or say something that doesn't do harm, but might mess things up a bit. And then that's a real difference. Mm-hmm. If it's said out of, I'm going to use this bread of life as stone on top of your head, that's one thing. If it's said of, this is some uncomfortable stuff, but I think we have to listen to it and talk about it and find God and meet God in it, that's something completely different. So I don't think necessarily that absence of conflict is not necessarily peace in the congregation. Sometimes it's just a false veneer of nicety. And I think that as preachers, we are called to honor people more deeply than that and to really speak to the complexity and the messiness of life and of Scripture and of God's presence in all of it. So, yeah, I do think that being pushed, but being pushed is important. And I have felt that already, and we've only been here a day and a half.
I would suppose that everybody here still believes in the form of the sermon, the live speaking, the testimony, as still relevant today. But as Anna also mentioned, you know, there's such the tendency to become media savvy and cutting edge like the media we're so saturated with. Are there ways that preachers, do you think, can improve how they connect with their audiences without resorting to bells and whistles?
I think so. Oh, I think I'm weird for my generation. I'll be 35 this summer, and I'm not very technologically savvy. And I don't know how to blog or any of those things. And so I do feel sometimes I'm a little oddity. But I think that what I have found moments in the preaching experience that have been most powerful for me and out of which have sparked the most debate is when I'm genuine about where I struggle and what gives me life. It really is when I see preaching as testimony, just as Anna was saying. When I testify to where I have seen God in the text and in the lives of, and I'll call them my people and in the world, that is what makes it, quote, relevant. And that's what makes it, quote, contemporary. If I find, and there have been moments where on Friday I'm writing my sermon and I'm boring myself and nothing has been sparked in me, I have to throw the sermon away, as painful as that is. Because if I'm not even engaged in it, how can I offer that as my offering to the congregation? So I think not letting ourselves get too staid, not letting ourselves get too bored, not letting ourselves get too dry, constantly pushing ourselves, coming to things like this, I think all of those aid in the preacher's longevity and allow us to kind of run the marathon. Because if it is just entertainment, I mean, there are all kinds of theological problems with that, but if it is just entertainment, we're only going to do it for a sprint, because you can only dance around so much. You only have so many things in your bag of tricks. So it has to be deeper than that and different.
We've heard a lot, too, about parables, and Barbara Brown Taylor last night encouraged us to use more of a storytelling form sometimes. Is that something you've done? How have you used parables in your own preaching?
I have. I think I have sort of a narrative, I guess you'd call it a narrative style. I don't know. I haven't done all that many first-person things, but yeah, I have preached in terms of story before. What we always want to know, those of us sitting in the pews at these conferences, is how do Tom and Barbara and all of those folks get such great stories about experiences that, I mean, that's not happened to us. At least we haven't been aware of it. And so we kind of want to walk around in their shoes and see what they see from time to time.
What are you reading these days?
I just read Anne Lamott's latest book. That's one of them. And I appreciate her humor and her clarity and her earthiness. Sometimes she shocks even me, and I think that's good. That's the latest thing I have read. I want to get Anna Carter Florence's book, although I was lucky enough to be in a class where She was sort of working some of that out early in her tenure at Columbia. Mm-hmm. But those are the two things that I have currently going. So I'm a mother of two small children, and so I can probably do a better job of carving out that time for reading and study, I think.
Shannon, thanks so much for talking with us.
It's been a joy. Thanks.